accession number 22163, reel 4.
Fred Jane, reel 4. So, do you think the government has done enough for the soldiers, soldiers? Do you think you should get a war pension?
Well, this is another thing, talking about pensions. I tried to get a war pension because of this, and I went down and had examinations and everything like this, and then eventually they put an adjudicator on it. They sent out a man from SAFO, took out a detail and sent it off, and then they sent me an adjudicator, put it on and sent me a report, filled it in, filled that in. So they eventually threw me on and said, well, although they couldn't relate this, because since they related this to do with asbestos, this complaint. So that was, so I applied for a pension eventually, and you had to have, I think, about 20 points to get a pension. I had about 10 or 12 points, I think it was. So I went back at them again. I said, well, this ain't bloody good enough. So I'd done so many years out in the jungle, and picked up diseases, God knows what out there, I said. But I said, so anyway, they put another adjudicator on it. And he come back again, and he said, he looks at it again, and they upped it a bit more. And it was put down traumatic stress and stuff like that, you know, that you went through. And what did they do then, interpreter? Well, they truly granted me then £3,600 as a gratuity payment in lieu of a pension. But I couldn't draw a pension. But I thought, well, that was better than nothing. But then the other pension, like I get an occupation pension as well, look, which I can't grumble. Not financially, I can. But as I say, my wife now, being younger than me, I've got to make provision now for her future, because she's not younger than me. If anything happens to me now, I've got to make sure her future's assured, like, you know.
So, are there any more memories of individual officers,
Oh, no, that's a good point, that is. No,
things that you remember about them, do you know what I mean?
Well, like, this is the blokes that were in the Gloucester, so was it too? There we are. Well, I knew most of these. I knew the commanding officer, but all these were officers that were serving about that time.
Tell me,
were in the
battalion. Can you tell me about one of them, Shannon?
Well, that one I spoke about, Peter.
Remember, so Jack Pitchford, he was killed in action.
All those were killed in action before I actually met. I knew of them.
Oh, right, so you didn't know.
But the one I knew of was in that book there.
Yeah.
Peter, I knew him.
Yeah, Peter Collister, is that?
Yeah. Because we were on a train, they were wounded and coming out on a train one way out of Burma, and we was going into Burma along the other way. And they shouted out, you're going the wrong way, mate, they said. We was going into it and they was going out of it, like. Now, the bloke I remember most of there would be Bernard Lee. He's not on there because he survived it, but he turned into a cabbage.
Really?
Yeah, he had businesses and all, like, you know, he just... He was a stockbroker, really.
Yeah. So what? Why did you turn into a cabbage?
I don't know what actually. I tried to get in touch with him, you see. So I wrote to the headquarters up there. They said, well, Radish's name. I wrote to him and said, well, look, it's really well, I can get in touch with him. He said, well, he said, if you went to see him, he said, he wouldn't recognise you. He said, it's just like talking to a cabbage. He said, and I don't think his wife, so... I said, well, do you think I might be able to see his wife? They lived up in Cheshire somewhere. So I said, well, I'd write to her. So I said I'd write a letter, but I wrote and she never responded back. So I thought, well, perhaps, you know, she'd been through the... She must have been getting on in years, I suppose.
Yeah.
But that was the main officer I know, was Bernard Lee. Well, that bloke Radish I told you about, he died not long ago. He married his housekeeper, come to finish.
What about some of the NCOs?
Well, my mate, Ron Gibbs, it lives in Clacton-on-Sea. He was just a private when I left him in November.
Yeah.
And when he came out, he was a corporal.
Really?
Because they went back up into what we call the cuts again, back up into the jungle area. I don't know what the fighting had finished anyway. And he came home in for 1946. And it wasn't until after 50 years I found out where he was through the Burma Star. And then we got to, I wrote to him, I found his address and his phone number. We started writing, but he's not a good writer, like, you know, he likes to. That's his point.
Do you remember them at the, when they were in the war? You know,
yeah. There's two chaps made down there, Bates and somebody else. Mm. They're both dead now. They were both friends of me and Ron's. They're both dead now.
Do you remember any other stories or incidents? Particular tales, things that went on in Burma?
Things sort of go sometimes, you can't put it together in your mind to think where you are.
I'll leave you to think that over. What about the stress of being in the jungle?
That's what I say. When I applied for this war pension, they couldn't put down, they wouldn't accept emphysema. Mm. I'd have both the cataracts in my eyes done, they wouldn't accept that.
No.
Because it wasn't aggravated by war service.
So tell me about when you were in the jungle. Not about when you applied for it, but, you know, what was the stress like? Because it must have been quite...
Well, you were tensed all the time, tensed up. Mm. There was always somebody behind you, looking around your back, you know, looking up at his tree, going to shoot.
Did you cope with that all right?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah. Eventually, not so well at first, or...
Yeah. We were scared to bloody bits at first, weren't you, of course? And that was only what? I was about 22 when I went out there. Mm. I was like 27 when I come home.
So, I mean, did everybody cope with the stress, or did some people...
Well, I think everybody had that. When the hell are we going to get out of this bloody war sort of thing, right? You know, we've done long enough here, by the time he was took out here, somebody else have a go like that. I think when it comes to fighting in that, like, you know, you're... When you have blokes that you knew and you were side by side, like, what was that? If it was a fight to the bloody last, that's what you were going to do anyway. So I don't think I had any fear of dying, not really. Because if it gets stopped, well, that'd be it.
Yeah.
I shan't have never got about it.
No.
I used to think, well, what would happen at home? My poor old mother, and because I have four sisters as well, look, see.
Yeah. Did you ever see anyone go bomber happy?
Well, that's another point I forgot to mention. When I came back on compassionate posting to Bristol, and I was put out that camp, looking out of the boilers and that. We moved us from there afterwards. They put my number 7 bomb disposal unit in Bristol. We better dig out bloody bombs.
Really?
For about 3 months we were doing this. You know, I'd do all around and do this and do that. So the experts...
What did you have to do? Tell me what you did. How did you dig out a bomb?
Well, first of all, they locate it, right, where it was dropped. Mm-hmm. And then they get the bomb disposal squad out there, the officers now. They can then detect it, what size bomb it is, where it is, what location it is. There. If it's there, where you start digging around there, you start digging, you make a dig a perimeter around the outskirts of it, so it's big enough then for the people to get down in there and take the fuses out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was...
So you'd be doing the digging all the way around.
But funny thing, I've seen this camp that I was attached to then in Bristol. Bomb disposal. So I thought myself, I don't know. And we had a cocky little bloody sergeant major there. He thought he was a cat's whiskers. He hadn't been over and done the thing. And there was us blokes with our bush hats gone as well. So I thought myself, I was over. One of the, he said, next day, he said, well, you chaps have got a job for you. He said, you're going to go and tar the roof of these nits nuts. I thought, bloody right, here we go, bloody tar, all right. So I said, I've had enough of this. I'm going to get myself in trouble here any time now. I thought myself. So I went down to the ordinary room. I said, see the wardroom sergeant. I said, well, excuse me. I said, I'm number so-and-so. I said, and I think I've been group 28, I said, to come out. Just, you know, we... Hang on a minute, sir. You didn't ought to be your bloody toys. You ought to be up in bloody class. You could be coming out next week, he said. I said, give us me bloody tickets. I went back and I see this sergeant major. I said, I'll be seeing you tomorrow, sir. Oh, won't you? I said, no, it's just around my film, bloody way out getting me ticket, I said. I said, you lucky bugger, he said. Yeah. I said, after 7 years, they just booked you for it, like, you know.
So where did you go to be demobbed?
place called Woking, I believe it was.
Woking.
That's where they get us out, I think, with our team up suits and all that.
Yeah.
And got our books over, what's it, like, post office savings books.
Oh, yeah, with your money.
Yeah, the money and that, and the rations books and all that.
What was your suit like?
I had a grey pinstripe, double-breasted, I always remember that. And me and my brother, we both, instead of having a raincoat, we both decided to have an overcoat, what they call a Harris's Tweed overcoat.
Yeah.
Very smart, you know.
What was it like coming home and coming back to Civvy Street?
Well, that was another dramatic experience. When I eventually got on the, off the plane, and they put us in camp down this way somewhere, and then we put us in officers' quarters overnight, give us food and everything like that, and our leave passes and everything made out.
This was when you came home on compassionate leave.
Yeah. And come up next morning, got us up, nice breakfast and everything, got us down to the station, back up, right up through Exeter, right up to Tempermees, got to Tempermees, walked down the incline there, well, if I can afford a taxi, like that. So I had a taxi, they had two kickbacks, see. I got out the train, got a taxi. So I sort of pulled up just round the corner from where I lived, and I sort of like, go then, put me kicked out of the car, foot guard, and like, coming down, I'm sort of a main road, and we took me quick watch out of there, and we had a front door and a glass door, if you call it. I sort of like, I crept in quietly, like, and my mother was in the back room, like, and I just walked in quite, oh, you were just, so where's our dad? Upstairs. He said, I had to wait as soon as you come in that door, he wants you straight up there, he said. So I go back out and come back in again, stand at the door. You alright, Dad? And I shut my mouth, you know. And of course I went out there and made a fuss with my mother and all that. I hadn't seen her what, for 5 years now.
Yeah.
It's a long time, see.
She changed a lot.
She was still hardworking, poor one. She lived till she was 81, see. Now that died at 53.
Yeah.
But, yes, and I thought something that was, you know, come on to that, but there it was, we had to accept it, I suppose.
Mm.
It was nice to get away from that out there, but I'd prefer to stay there. My dad's still up in the life, really, if I'd have had my way. But first thing he said to me when he see me, he said, thank God, aren't you home? He said, I can die in bloody peace now, he said. So you could tell the range now, he said. You've had the experience, he said. You've been all through it. He said, you know what it's all about.
Yeah.
He said, you can take over now, he said.
Yeah.
Two or three times on these little pills, what you should call them then, like painkillers they were. I forget what they call them then. Some of the kind of aspirin it was, but only allowed to have so many, like, but two or three times he tried to do himself in.
Mm.
I found some razor blades in a matchbox that one day.
So, I mean, there must have been a regimental padre attached to all the regiments you were in. Do you ever have any contact with a padre?
No, I don't think I did.
Mm.
I used to go to the church services at such, you know. But I didn't think we had much of that out in the jungle, if I remember rightly. Mm. Only thing you had to think was, how does anybody going to die or is dead or something, I believe.
Mm. I mean, what do the padres do all the time? Do you know?
Well, they take a church service, no?
Mm.
In the open air, I suppose. But as I remember, I don't remember if we ever got to that stage out there at all, like, you know, because we were just in the fighting and that was it.
Yes, yeah.
No, I never heard of a... There was a padre, though. I can't think of his name now.
Yeah. Did you ever go to a burial in the jungle?
Oh, yeah, we buried a lot of our chaps, yeah.
Did you?
Mm. But it was only a bloody plastic bag, like, in the ground, and that was it.
Mm.
Took the tags off, like, and that was... Yes, okay. Yes, I think out of our battalion, it come out of Rangoon. About 700, I think it was. So, time we finished up in Cohima, on the border window, after Marsh and all that, maybe about disease, anything like that. Well, I think it was about 300 got back. My legs was hanging off, but I said, you've got to keep bloody going. Mm. Oh, it's fit, I suppose. It must have been fit.
Yeah, you were young, yeah. Did you have any dealings with the Royal Army Medical Corps?
Not directly, only if I went in for treatment or anything like that at all, no.
Or your battalion medic, would it, that you saw?
No, I don't think we had. Our battalion didn't have a medical officer.
Did they?
No. Oh, well, which was unusual out there, but we didn't have one.
Oh, what had happened to him, do you know?
Well, we didn't have one allocated, put it like that.
Oh, right.
No. I think you would have got shoved in a truck and went to the nearest hospital if there was one. Our nearest one from where we were 80 miles. Because I went down there for dental treatment once. And when I come back from there, after all my bloody teeth drilled and something, and because you had no proper wash, you went down to the stream on the morning, got in and washed yourself over there, brush your teeth, all the bloody fillings come out. Because smoking and that had ruined all my teeth, so when I come out, I had to bloody let out. This is my second lot now, I think.
Yeah.
I have these specially done because the gums are bad. I can I can't chew on them properly, but no, I don't think I'm marked on by something else, but I'm still alive, I suppose. I've got to be thankful. Barbara, she's as good as gold.
Yeah.
Oh, she does everything for me.
Yeah. Did you ever have any contact with the military police?
Yeah. Yes.
What did you think of them?
Well, they were doing a job, but we never thought much of them. We thought it was only one place for them, really. But then when I was come on leave from Taunton, when I was stationed there first, which came up to Bristol about a day, Saturday or Sunday, I'd catch a train at Taunton and get off at Temper Meads.
Yeah.
And then I'd get across the exit over. There was always two there stood on the bloody gate. Yeah. So we had no passenger or nothing. I thought, as I said, so I said, just started chatting around there. I just took a no notice walking down with our wife was not where I was. He said, "Where's the nearest buses?" He said, "Down the bottom, mate." He said, "Oh, we spoke from like there. We just walked from." I said, "Stop!" I said, "I clamped us on and chucked us back down and put us in Jankers Room."
Yeah. Yeah.
What's another job I did when we were down in Essex? The place called. What's it called now? Saffron Warden.
Oh, yeah.
In Essex.
Mm. Were you there for long
haul? Only a short while because I got detailed off to work with a chap in a private house there for a sergeant's mess.
Mm.
And I had to go in there and help him put the supplies in, do this and do that. He'd done all the cooking and that. Like, and I used to go there in there. Allocated out there every day, go down there and do the spuds in. And I always remember I used to do the roast potatoes. We had a little primer stove, that's all we had. Cook the potatoes first of all, so far, a pile of fat and dip the potatoes in there and had to roast them up. Like, you know. Well, I got a dab on it cooking then, like, you know.
So, what did you think about the officers? Because they got much better conditions of service, didn't they, and pay and everything.
Well, pay-wise, I suppose, but then again, they had a lot of responsibility, see. They, I mean, they had to take the rap for anything that went wrong, and if you were told to do something and you didn't do it, well, just your bloody bad luck, because if you got yourself into trouble, that was your own fault, because they were there to guide and get you through. They had their orders from the top down. They had to carry it down through the ranks, and that's how it went on, really. But officers that I've met, and I can't say that... The ones that I knew in the Gloucesters, anyway, I can't say they were a bad lot at all.
No. Do you think they were good? I mean, were they good at their jobs?
Oh, yeah. Well, as I say, a lot of those officers I pointed out there, they've already been abroad then 7 or 8 years.
Mm.
Never known to England at all.
Mm.
So I suppose to them it'd have been... There's a lot of them married Burmese women, out, I believe. One of them, Rangoon. It was for the Raffles Club, I think it was. Was it in Rangoon?
Raffles in Singapore, I think.
Singapore, that's right, Singapore. Because I got a chap in our Bramall Star unit, he was in the artillery and he got took prisoner and he worked on that railway, you know, the. What was it, railway? He's alright now, Lisa.
Yeah.
I was fighting the case for this compensation, you know, for the Jack prisoner war.
Oh, yes.
Well, I think they eventually got £10,000 apiece. I don't know whether they've actually had it or not, but I wrote to Angela Brown and one or two more of the MPs and got it recognised, and eventually it was brought up in the ice is a common, and eventually it was granted later. Yeah.
Where were you when VJ Day happened?
Where I told you where I was having that drinking bout.
Oh, yes.
Bihar.
Oh, was that VJ Day or VE Day?
B Day, VE yeah. Day, VJ Day. Where was I?
Would you have been at home by then?
But when was VJ? What date was that?
VJ, it's today, I think. Tomorrow. It's mid-August.
Oh, bloody know that, didn't I?
Yeah. So I think you were probably in Bihar.
Yeah, sure it must have been.
Because you didn't come home until November 45.
No, no.
Know? Yeah, you must have been in Ranchi or Bihar.
Yeah.
Right. Obviously not a big celebration. Just relieved, were you?
That's what I was saying.
Relieved
it was over. No, it's over. Robert's not going to go on over here, like sort of thing. It was our turn going to come, like.
Yeah.
Well, I was thankful to be coming home when I had that compassionate posting, because in any case, as I, my group was coming up to group 28, I'd have been coming home in any case, I think, on my service that I'd done.
Mm.
But this happened to happen just in the middle of it, so it took it much quicker.
So how easy was it to settle back into civilian life?
Well, I couldn't make my mind up, dear. I came out in May, and I had a 3 months leave, I think it was, I had to come. Or was it, going out, boosted every day, you know. So I don't know. Those people that we met in South Africa, I got invited back, they had two daughters. And that, they immigrated out to Australia. I think it was around about that time I had a letter. I don't know if they got me address, but they got a letter. I had a letter saying, this is so-and-so, and so they were twins, I believe. They said, we're out now in Adelaide. How are you now? Are you still in the army? Have you got home? Are you married? All this. I said, don't suppose you fancy coming to Australia. And I was like that. I thought, that's a bloody good, just drop it all out, their accommodation and all. I thought, shall I, shan't I? And I had mum there. I thought, well, I can't leave her, really. But I was tempted, and I said, let's up and go, like, but probably got on well out there, I said, no, but after sharing all that time up east, I suppose you could. Must be a nice country to live in, Australia.
Oh, yes.
Ever been there?
Yes, yes, wonderful country. It's different to here, though.
How long ago was that, though?
A couple of years ago. So what do you think the physical, what do you think the emotional effects of war have been on you?
A lot. I can't dream it every night.
You still dream?
Yeah, I dream about it.
Yeah. You've dreamt about it always?
Yeah.
Right since the war?
Well, in my first marriage I was just the same.
Mm.
I jump up in the middle of the night and get up in a bed window, I think I was in the trenches or something. I was outrageous like that.
Really?
And I had the same with Barbara. But it's sort of been an action, I've been fighting with somebody, I've kicked you out of bloody bed a couple of times.
So you've had that consistently all the years?
That's why I think they put on my pension records, traumatic stress, caused by the conditions we were living in out there, see.
Mm.
That's what I think that was.
Because how long were you actually in combat? From Imphal, was it? Swebo Imphal?
Well, we went Swebo, that would have been in March, April, that would have been,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, something like April, yeah.
And then we went from there up the Manipur Road, not that way. Then I came back. The other place I've been to, it was a place called Tamu and Tidum.
Mm-hmm. What happened there?
There was some actions there because one of the officers that I knew where, I think he was a Bristol chap.
Mm. Were you in action then?
I was in HQ, we were defending headquarters, yeah.
Right, were you in HQ company?
Well, we were there defending, like we had to sort of defend the headquarters place, as it was, and
which
we were there.
Which company were you in? Do you remember? Which company were you in?
I was in D Company, I believe.
Right. D Company of what? Tell me exactly.
Gloucesters.
Yeah, of First Gloucesters.
I think some of the officers don't. Mm. It was Captain Schmell, I remember him.
Mm.
Denise gets so long ago, it's like the doctor. I've done such a lot of writing on it. Well, I've done so much writing regarding my dad and his brother with the Ministry of Defence and the all that business.
Yes. Yeah.
Speaks to medical people, everything. Well, I've done all that.
Yeah.
But I haven't done too much on my own. I just got my recorder of what I did.
Mm.
And the data. But that isn't correct, actually, because the dates they got on there, I did join the Gloucesters in 1942.
Mm.
But it's not recognised I'm joining the Gloucesters there until 1945.
Oh, right, yeah.
So you were all that time in the middle, didn't belong to nobody.
Yes.
Although you were in the Gloucesters.
Yeah.
But, no, the damn good pressure, because we had another. I went to all those freedom parades, you know, they had.
Yeah,
I went
yeah.
to those marches and all that. And,
So, just getting back to my last couple of questions here. So, the dreams you have, they're always about being in trenches, are they?
Yeah, or, you know, they're coming at you sort of thing, you know.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
Was there ever an incident where that you did get overrun by Japanese?
Well, yes, because I think myself, they had a habit of coming at you, like we would our rifles, but we was always going like this.
Mm.
And they were fanatics, they'd jump up in the air and come down like that with their bayonet sight, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. I've got, when I say I've got close, I've to put the bayonet through, and the best size I thought about it, but the best, surest thing is I put the bloody bullet through, and that's the quickest way.
You didn't use your bayonet?
Well, if I had to, I'd have done it, but then again, I got a bloody bullet, it was quick.
But
get that near, get near, bang, this, get that.
Yeah.
But they were hard and British there.
Mm.
Very hard people.
Mm.
Mind you, I'll admit they were bloody good soldiers, bloody good soldiers.
Mm.
We were just like bloody raw recruits out there and taking on a crowd like that. Well,
yeah. It's been a very interesting story.
No, you sure? Because I think myself,
yeah.
If I could have had the time and sat down and put it all together on paper, that's what I was going to do.
But we've heard your feelings and your thoughts.
And do you think that covers a good field of it?
Oh, yes. And there's thousands and thousands of words have gone down on this tape. Because it's much quicker to speak them than to write them. And if you're not a Graham Greene, your speech is much more descriptive than your writing, unless you're an expert.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's been absolutely fascinating. So thank you very much indeed.
Now, is there anything you'd like to borrow to take away with you? You can send it back to me if you'd like to.
A chat about that in a moment. So I'll just say Fred Jane, that's the end of Reel 4, and thank you very much.